Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of What Most People Think. And I'm going to bring in my guest straight away because I'm delighted to have him back. But you're not back though, are you, Andrew Doyle? You're joining us live from Arizona. What are you doing out there?
Well, I'm in Arizona for a while. I'm looking into the very seriously looking into the prospect of moving here permanently. So I'm here for the time being, checking stuff out. I went to visit Tombstone the other day, which is really my real reason for wanting to come here, so I could go and relive the Val Kilmer, Kurt Russell film, because it's just down the road for me, really, a couple of hours away.
Arizona, very cool. I mean, we were talking just before we came on air about, you know, these people when somebody they don't like gets in power, they flee, and yeah. Then you've sort of gone, well, I'm going to go to that place. You were suggesting there could be some sort of cultural exchange scheme.
Well, yeah, because Rosie O'Donnell and Helen Hunt have gone to Ireland, and myself and Graham Linehan have gone over to America. So we could actually make that an official thing, just swap citizenships. I think that would work really well. And they're fleeing Trump. I could say that I was fleeing Starmer. I mean, it's not true, but I could say it.
But he's not fleeable, is he? I mean, he's no. Really deeply disappointed, annoying, irritating human being, but that's part of the reason you wouldn't flee.
What a damnable indictment to be not fleeable. You're just not a fleeable leader.
He's not a fleeable person. Well, listen, maybe you could do it. They used to do this thing with council flats back in the day where, like, if you lived by the sea and you wanted to get in London, vice versa. So it could be like a council flat exchange screen.
And look, there's so many people over in the US who are complaining about Trump and so many people in the UK complaining about Starmer. This just solves absolutely everything. We could do it in one fell swoop and then everyone be politically homogenized in either country. I think it's a winner.
Let's create a fluid global system where everybody leaves where they live based on the reaction to the last election. And it's interesting that you mentioned Starmer there and him not being fleeable. One of the things we're going to talk about in this week's show is just what is Keir Starmer? There's a real kind of hodgepodge of policies and directions, you know, from a tax and spend budget last time to a bit of diet austerity this time, to supposedly a left-wing guy, but seems to be, didn't take that much nudging to be Trump's best mate. So we're going to talk about that and the upcoming spring statement. I should time check this. This is 6 o'clock UK time on the Monday. So just if you're listening to this after the spring statement, that'll be why we haven't said things that were in the spring statement. And we're also going to continue the chat about the TV show Adolescence last week and the hand-wringing that it prompted in terms of what's going on with young men. And we're going to get Andrew's take on that. And in the Patreon only, we're going to talk about what is the woke right? What is it? What is it, Andrew? In a nutshell, just give people a little tease here. What is the woke right?
It is those who are on the right side of politics as opposed to the left side of politics who are who have a tendency towards authoritarianism and censorship as the woke left do.
So I was going to say that sounds familiar. Or offence archaeology as well.
Bit of that and also an obsession with group identity. So there are all these traits that link them that have nothing to do with left and right. I mean, we'll go into it later, no doubt, but I've never thought that the culture war has anything to do with left and right. So it makes perfectly sense that you've got woke people on the left and the right.
Yeah, it's increasingly the woke right and the woke left are a Venn diagram where there's only one circle. New patrons. As you know, Andrew, we roast names here. We've got James Kennard. James Kennard sounds to me like a guy that does really expensive bathroom surfaces. James Kennard Kitchens. James Kennard Kitchens, JKK.
That would work. I also see it as a kind of, it could work as a scholar's name as well. James Kennard.
The James Kennard Foundation.
If you put a middle initial in there, like James S. Kennard. Then all of a sudden, you're someone writing tracts about, I don't know, anthropology or something of that kind.
Well, I mean, a middle initial raises the bar for any name. What would you go for? Would you be an Andrew F. Doyle, I suspect, maybe?
Well, my middle initial is actually R, but I like F.
F works, doesn't it? F and S work. R doesn't work at all for some reason.
It has a gravitas to it. What about X? X is quite good.
Yeah, Andrew X. Doyle. That just sounds like an email address.
Yeah, that's true.
Jeffrey F. Norcott is actually mine. That sounds immediately better.
You are immediately an intellectual. It's like wearing glasses or having a British accent in America. It immediately adds that
mate, quality. I'm British. I've started to wear glasses and I've got an F in my name. Fucking give me a visa. We've got Jane K. Jane K. Jane K. I mean, that does sound OnlyFans-ish, doesn't it? Jane K.
Or girl band-ish.
Yes, Jane K. Maybe there's two Janes in the girl band.
Yeah, it's like Mel C and Mel B.
Yes.
And it's Jane K and J.C.
I'm always polite in the end to the women, but I was going down the OnlyFans route. I was discussing OnlyFans recently, and it really, I was sort of thinking about what I'd want from an OnlyFans, and I think it would be mainly encouragement. I don't know if I'd need any sexual content. I'd just need recognition and support.
I'd just like someone to give me sort of some tips on literature and what books to read, and maybe a bit of critical analysis of, you know, Shakespeare and era poets.
Hardcore Chaucer.
Yeah. That's a great name for an OnlyFans. Hardcore Chaucer.
Well, I could do it. Hardcore Jeffrey, and I've got the correct spelling. And then there's somebody who's just called Gagfob, who obviously doesn't want to be known. Perhaps it's a sensitive thing at work.
Gagfob?
Gagfob does sound... You know, on X, as it's become increasingly anti-woke and right-wing, a lot of people there don't have their real names, and they just have some sort of drawn caricature. Gagfob sounds like somebody who would accuse me of sucking the left-wing cock, and why don't I just fuck off to the BBC?
Yeah, Gagfob has a Pepe Frog face.
Yes.
Most definitely.
Gagfob. I'm now going to find out like it's some really noble Austrian name, and I've just insulted their family. But that is definitely how it looks, and there are, you know, it ties in what we're going to talk about in the Patreon only. There are plenty of those people.
You never lose followers off this. You know, whenever you're taking the piss out of people's names, do you never get someone emailing you saying, actually, I've changed my mind?
Do you know it's the opposite? Is they get really pissed off if I don't give them a full roasting. But you've got to go to the OnlyFans for that. David Domain, our super patron, David Domain, who first up, he wanted to say that he's very much missing you on Headliners and GB News. It's not been the same since you left, mate. I know you're too modest to say, fuck yeah. But we, you know, you were a big part of that show. There's been a few people getting in touch, by the way, before we do the main talking point, because I'm doing a tour show in, well, I was calling it Alnwick. Do you know this is up near Scotland? Alnwick?
Never heard of it.
This tour of mine is going everywhere, mate. apparently you pronounce it Anick. And it's Alnwick, but you pronounce it Anick.
Is it one of these in the Highlands, some sort of obscure?
I think it's on the way. I mean, like, I think that, in fairness to my tour promoter, they've basically gone, fucking hell, if we're going to make them go that far, we better throw in something else. And what I know from these sort of gigs is it could well be in a community centre.
Yeah, it's very socialist of you to take your entertainment to the masses. I think that's great.
Well, can I just say another thing that's very socialist of me is my ticket prices, right? If you look around, just if you're ever bored, just have a look at the left-wing comics and how much they charge. Just if you're ever bored. Now, some would say, well, that's because the demand is there, Jeff, but that's not the point. Okay.
No, it's not the demand. They are militant capitalists, the left-wing comics. I've never known more capitalistic-minded people.
I wish I was as good at capitalism as they are.
Yeah. No, they've got it nailed. They know exactly what they're doing.
Yeah. What is it? I mean, I think mine is about, I think it's a top whack of 20 quid. Then all the other things charge. They throw on a couple of quid here and there. The new thing now is that the venues charge a venue levy, which is basically like a Trump tariff. And the worst thing is the way that some of them word it, they make it sound like it's me.
Yeah.
So I had loads of people when the tour first went on sale screenshotting it going, this is a bit Trumpy, isn't it, Jeff? Tariffs.
I have to be honest, though, 20 quid, that's very reasonable. I couldn't get away with that. It'd be 8 quid and chicken in a basket thrown in, I think.
Take you and a hand job. Sorry, had to. From you to them or them to you? I don't know. Would you sort of say you're allowed to give me one or?
That's a lot of hand jobs in one evening. And I think that either way is not really physically sustainable.
Biologically, it'd probably be easier to dish out that many than be.
Yeah, I'd much rather do that.
So, I bet you're glad you're back on the podcast, aren't you? You're out there with all these highbrow projects, and I've got you talking about dishing out hand jobs to punters. We were talking about Tring, which is one of the new days we've added to the tour. And that, I said that Tring sounds like sort of Urban Dictionary for a fit girl. Like, she is Tring, mate. She's so Tring.
It's very onomatopoetic, isn't it?
She's the Tringest Tring. Bitch I ever saw. I'm aping the language of the streets.
It's got great quality about it. Where is Tring?
Tring is in, I do not know. I mean, some of these places, I just put a postcode in. I just drive. Tring, I should know where it is. It's in Buckinghamshire, probably.
Do you just choose your locations on the basis of how obscure they sound?
I am saying the obscure ones. We are in Bristol, Bath and Brighton.
There's places like Muff in Donegal.
Shingay Cum Wendy in Bedfordshire, which is one of my favourite. I was talking about Tories in Northern England. I was talking about how once upon a time there were many, briefly, and now there aren't. In the northeast region of England, there's just now one Conservative MP. That is Matt Vickers in Stockton West. Well done, Matt. He's like an outpost, isn't he? He's like an outrider, just a vigilante that's just been left there for the when the Tories rise again in the north.
Are you appreciating or anticipating a bit of pushback when you go to like the Labour heartlands for your comedy?
Well, it's the first tour that I'm doing with a Labour government, so it's quite fun. Because, yeah, you know, the position of not, I never really defended the Tories, but I sort of like took the piss out of the hypocrisy and the hyperbole on the left. But now, just being able to go straight in on a Labour government, mate, I would have voted for Labour years ago. I didn't vote for them at the last election, but I would have if I'd have known how much fun it would have made the tour shows.
Much better, isn't it? Much easier. But then are you particularly pro-Tory or are you more reform?
No. I wouldn't be in. Well, because I've always been socially liberal, economically right wing. I wouldn't say that reform are that. I don't know what they are yet. I don't know if they know. I don't know if they need to know yet. They just need to be a word at this point.
Yeah.
Reform is just a great word to be called. The other two parties, Labour, that sounds like hard work. Conservative, that sounds boring. Reform, good word.
They've done a good PR job there, haven't they? Like, it's all about what it sounds like. It's a difficult thing to argue against, isn't it? Let's have some reform.
Yeah, let's not. I mean, Conservative literally sounds like, no, let's keep things. This whatever track we're on,
yeah,
let's just keep going. I mean, Liberal Democrat is probably the best name if they were either of those things.
They're neither of those things, but Labour, you're right. I mean, Labour have literally named themselves after the most painful experience that a woman can have.
Yeah, something that God visited upon women as punishment.
Yeah. I mean, they may as well call it the serpent in the Garden of Eden.
Yeah. Do you want to join the painful childbirth party? What most people think. So the thank you is to, well, we sold out the Leicester Square Theatre show. So we're already adding another show. If you go on Live Nation or in any of my social media, you'll see that we've got that new date on sale. There are also dates on sale now in Leeds and Tring. And what I put, Andrew, is, you know, comedians always say, due to phenomenal demand, due to vomit-inducing, erection-busting demand. I just said, due to reasonably brisk demand. I tried to think of the best way to describe it.
Yeah.
And look, the London day didn't sell out in a day. It didn't even sell out in a week, but it sold out in 9 days. So I'd describe that as reasonably brisk.
That is reasonably brisk, but you can't really put that on a poster in terms of...
Well, I did.
Oh, you did? You just went for it, did you?
Reasonably brisk demand. Also,
due to moderate demand.
Pleasantly surprising demand.
Yeah, that's nice.
The other one that comedians do, which is slightly disingenuous, is when they say, I'm just blown away by this. Blown away by the thing that you've made a 5-year career plan of happening. Blown away is not the right word. Just be honest and go, I am happy that this has happened, but like all comedians, I feel like it was 5 years overdue.
Well, comedians are known for their hyperbole, aren't they? I mean, I've lost count of the number of Edinburgh posters that have star of Michael McIntyre's Roadshow, as though McIntyre isn't the star of Michael McIntyre's Roadshow.
That was the key one, wasn't it? I always say to them, take that out. Whenever they do a poster, I say, he was on. He was on.
Yeah. Guest on.
Yeah.
Never invited back.
Yeah. Couple of cutaways on a league of their own. But the good thing, I'm doing a work in progress tour. It's shaping up. I know comedians, again, this is a cliche, but comedians always say it's shaping up to be my best yet. But it's even though I called it Basic Bloke 2, right, which, again, I'm just trying to do these stupid things which other people wouldn't do. Basic Bloke 2, it is different to the last show. I think I might be back pushing the envelope again a bit more because I've had a couple of gasps, Andrew, right. 5 shows in. I've had a couple of gasps. Good sign, right?
That's not like you, Jeff.
Well, I've been going a bit more, you know, comfortable, getting the old slippers on, but I'm back in gasp territory. So the old boy's still got it, mate.
Yeah, no, that's good. It's just it's been a while. But then calling it a sequel, making it a sequel, implies that your last one was fantastic and everyone wanted more. Is that
well? The last one sold more than any that I'd ever done. So all I did was apply simple Hollywood logic of the film 21 Jump Street. It's very
fun.
Very funny film, underrated. The scene in it where Channing Tatum goes back to school as a jock and thinks that he can bully people and realizes what millennials / Gen Zs have become is way ahead of its time, by the way. Even if you just watch it on YouTube, if you put in 21 Jump Street, rucksack scene.
Okay.
It's very funny. But then what happened was that one did quite well. So they called the sequel 22 Jump Street. And there's a scene in here. There's a scene in here where Ice Cube is saying it's called 22 Jump Street. And he goes, isn't that just like 21 Jump Street, but you've just added a one? No, it's completely different. This is 22 Jump Street.
It's a bit forced. They did it with the Oceans films as well, didn't they? They just kept counting up.
This is the thing, is Basic Bloke 2, though. It's going to be like Empire Strikes Back, mate. It's just going to blow people away.
Do you have a subtitle?
Well, so it's called There's No Bloke Without Fire. Continuing my homage to shit 90s action films, I've given it that kind of...
That's good. And it also ties into the tradition of having puns in your show titles for comedians.
But look, you know, not all of us can have a name like Joe Lycett, which scans with so many things. So I had to sort of manufacture the punnability of it by putting the word in that I wanted to pun. Have you ever had a pun in your show titles?
Wouldn't work with me. I can't think of one that rhymes with Doyle or, you know, could potentially... I suppose if you were going down the environmentalist route, it could be Just Stop Doyle.
That is fucking great. That is really good. You should... Or Well-Doiled Machine.
Well-Doiled Machine. Okay. Actually, there's loads. When you start thinking down
there's
the oil
loads.
Route,
yeah.
I'm quite an oily person. Okay, fine. Let's go with that.
Okay, right. We've got Andrew's comeback show. What is your fuck you?
It's the news this week about the Shakespeare Birthplace Trust. I don't know if you heard about this. So Shakespeare's Birthplace Trust, which is the charity that's in charge of the various properties connected to William Shakespeare in Stratford-upon-Avon and also has lots of archive material and curated material. They've decided to decolonize their collection. And the language they're using is, of course, the boilerplate of social justice. You know, a lot of his work contains racist, sexist, homophobic aspects, and they need to decolonize and contextualize. And the thing about it is, it's like it feels outdated already.
It does.
It feels
like
2021. They're just not clocking in to the new trend or the new way of thinking. It's so banal. It's so boring. And I'm so bored of people trying to decolonize Shakespeare. You know, the Globe Theatre has an annual anti-racist webinar where they get scholars to go online so that people can just berate Shakespeare for being a bit racist. And you just think, these people are like grubs compared to the finest literary genius the UK has ever produced.
And it's a webinar as well. The fact it's a webinar, they couldn't even be asked to meet up to do it.
It's lazy as well as embarrassing.
I know what you mean. It is weird. There are these things now. I think what's happened is basically people have come into contact with not how the anti-woke movement feel about things, but how the public feel. It's the public that got fed up with this stuff. And there are things that are in motion, like Disney, like Snow White's a good example of a project that was launched. You know, there are still films and TV shows in development that probably went into development around 2020.
Yeah.
So there's still some stuff that's a bit awkward for studios that's got to be pushed out. But I think when it comes to any kind of arts council-y stuff, they're still so insulated from public opinion.
The change has happened just as quickly as the woke thing rose, you know, and you're going to get a lot of people, particularly in our industry, sort of saying, I was never pro-woke. It's happening so, so quickly. I mean, and we saw it with the Jaguar advert, you know, that was clearly developed during the height of the woke era. And you see these sort of epicene, gender fluid models, you know, no cars, nothing like that. And it just looks tired. Like it looked weirdly old fashioned, even though it's contemporary. And I just think that's what's going to happen, is because woke is sort of dying now, in about 2 or 3 years, all of this will just feel like, that was weird. What happened there? And I think the arts industries, I think the museums, I think the libraries, I think academia, those are sort of the bolt holes for the woke. Those are the strongholds. And I think they're not going to let go without a fight. I think the comedy industry, definitely, you know, last year's Edinburgh Fringe Awards, Nika Burns, who's the head of the awards, was going on about how proud she was that the shortlist had mostly female identifying people on it and a range of gender spectrum. But no one gives a damn about this except for you and your posh mates. Like the audiences don't care.
I do think that the arts, darling, in that way, any industry where a woman can swish a pashmina over her shoulder before departing a meeting, I think those industries will be the last to fall. Right, we're going to start off by talking about UK politics, and the spring statement is this week, so let's get into that. Right, so I don't know how dialed into UK politics you are, Andrew, but there are cuts. There are cuts coming. There are cuts to the civil service coming. I mean, I'm old enough to remember that if you criticised the civil service or said that there should be cuts, it was part of some sort of far-right agenda. Do you remember that? Under the Tories, it's they're trying to undermine the state. This is so they can push through their fascistic far-right agenda.
Although they never did it, did they? I mean, they were talking for ages about the bonfire of the Quangos and stripping down the civil service, and they never really did it properly. They never did a proper job. And every single whistleblower from the civil service who talks about this stuff says that it's completely captured. You even had that whistleblower talking about how when the Tory government was trying to push through certain policies, there were people within the civil service just not doing it, just sort of saying, no, we sort of know. But I mean, this is the definition of deep state stuff, isn't it?
Well, yeah, and Starmer quite quickly, Dominic Cummings having been identified as a sort of far-right pariah, it wasn't long before a centre-left government were basically saying Dominic Cummings stuff, so you can't do anything with these lot, can you? Yeah, but that moved from being bullying to kind of an objective analysis of their functioning. I mean, even coming down to questioning the power of the OBR, the Office of Budget Responsibility, you know, after the catastrophic Liz Truss thing, which you're legally obliged, you have to say catastrophic somewhere
you
in
do.
That sentence.
You do.
But yeah, but they questioned the power of the OBR and the accuracy of the OBR. Labour are doing all the same shit now.
Yeah, because that's the thing about, you know, colliding with the brick wall of reality. It's all very well theorising about this stuff, and then when you're actually having to deal with these people, you suddenly realise, oh, well, maybe our predecessors had a point. They have to strip all of this because, you know, there's a lot of waste going on. And these are the same people, by the way, who are going to be very, very angry about Doge and about what Elon Musk is doing with the Trump administration. But really, they're going to have to start replicating some of those tactics.
Do you think that, you know, in Britain, we've got to give it a cute name like Doge, and we need merch. We need merch with the austerity. Austerity never had merch, did it?
I mean, Doge was a perfect name because of the whole dog meme and, you know, that Doge dog.
Yes, yeah. It's quite a cute motif. I mean, austerity was just, it was so depressing and sad, and we brought this on ourselves. Whereas Doge, straight away, I mean, like, there'll be plenty of people who even vote for Trump that won't agree with all of it, but you'll have to agree that's some fucking good merch.
Yeah, there's good merch. And I think everyone can kind of agree, you know, there are elements of Doge where you think, and even USAID, where you think, well, you know, landmine clearance, that sounds like something we should be investing in. There are certain things that, you know, you should be investing in overseas. But then there's the sort of Guatemalan LGBT pottery classes and stuff. And you kind of think, all right, let's not do that. Because those are the pet projects of the elite. And I think pretty much everyone on the left and the right accepts that that is nonsense and that should never have been allowed to happen.
Yeah, well, you say that now, Andrew, but when the good pottery dries up from Guatemala,
actually, that's
I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it for
you. And I do have quite a strong collection of Guatemalan pottery. It's a good talking point. It makes me look progressive when I have dinner guests around, so it's quite good.
Well, you can fund it. You can fund it yourself. That's how the free market works. I mean, some of the stats coming out. I mean, I went to say eye water in there, and I just realised how tabloidy. I hate
eye water. Is anything really eye water?
No,
an operation
numbers.
On your urethra is eye watering. I think that's about it.
Yeah, eye watering. It's like when people romp as well. Like, you know, when the tabloids used to say they romped till the small hours, or calling prisoners lags. Nobody else calls prisoners lags. Only newspapers do because it's a really short word and it allows them to say more other words. But yeah, there's eye watering numbers there. Like one of my patrons sent me this stat. Bikram sent me a stat about so. With PIP payments, there's 5,000, just over 5,000 people on PIP for spinal cord injuries, but just under 270,000 for anxiety and depression, right? It's quite high. Motability, this in some ways, this is just a stark, right? Motability was 4 billion in 2019, 7 billion now. So the difference between how much motability has gone up is you could use that to remove the welfare cap.
I mean, I'm a supporter of this kind of thing. I do think vulnerable people should be supported by the state. And I think that's all very well and good. But, you know, I think ultimately, if there is expenditure going to projects that aren't really where the money's not going where it's meant to be going, then of course they have to tighten up on that kind of stuff. I just think there's been a lot of flabbiness about it, hasn't there?
Mate, don't bring flabby people into it, okay? This is what happens. You're out there in Trump and you're engaging in this hate speech, okay?
No, I wasn't going there.
It's a condition.
But I've seen a few people over here, and that, you know, those carts that really overweight people have, and they're often state supplied, but they exacerbate the problem because they prevent the people who need to move around from moving around. They prevent them from walking.
I mean, it's a great metaphor. It's like saying, I've got anxiety. Well, don't go out anymore then. Yeah. Okay, so how does my anxiety go away? It doesn't, but we don't have to think about it anymore.
What most people think.
So just to chat a bit about Keir Starmer now, because he's going to be possibly involved with doing a bit of austerity. Don't call it austerity. Don't call it an emergency budget. It's definitely neither of those things. But, you know, he's such a mixed bag of political characteristics, because on the one hand, the last budget was real tax and spend, and they did, you know, they did some left-wing stuff, right? You know, did VAT on private schools. You know, they've sort of hammered business. I say that they're not going to do it again. And, you know, he says that he's slashing regulation. But equally, the employment bill has added a lot of regulation as well. The schools bill has brought a lot of stuff back under their control and removed a lot of freedoms. You know, and as I said in the intro, he seems to be quite happy cozying up to Trump. It doesn't seem, you know, it might be transactional or strategic. He doesn't seem to be that ill at ease with it. What is he?
He didn't go as far as David Lammy. You know, David Lammy wrote that Trump was a neo-Nazi sociopath.
Yeah.
And then when Trump won, he put out a tweet saying, oh, congratulations, can't wait to work with you, which makes me worried about David Lammy, actually. Why is he talking to neo-Nazis in that way? That's creepy.
But when I was with the president, he's just such a warm guy. This is what they all do now. They go, I just sat with him for a while. Mandelson as well. What was it? Mandelson said that Donald Trump's a very kind person. Now,
yeah, but that's Mandelson. I mean, that's like Dracula saying, yeah, it's very kind.
But he's the first person I've ever heard say that. Even other people that have toadied up to Trump, I've never heard anyone say that.
I've heard people say he's really nice if you compliment him. And, yeah. And I mean that seriously. Like, people who know him personally, they say once you've complimented him, that's it. He's your friend for life. That would bear out in terms of his behavior. But it doesn't surprise me that Starmer's cozying up to him, because he kind of has to. Like, I don't see what the option is here. Even when he was in the Oval Office and Trump and J.D. Vance were pointing out that there are some free speech issues in the UK. And, you know, Starmer couldn't be all that robust. What he said was, well, I'm proud of the history of free speech. Well, yeah, history is the right word there, because you're determined to demolish it. But it was just interesting that he couldn't be more robust in his rebuttal there, because A, he knows that they're right, and B, he can't afford to piss off Trump and Vance.
But, I mean, what I thought was interesting about that was that he had a minor pop back at J.D. Vance. I wonder if Trump had said the same thing, even if Trump had said exactly the same thing, whether he'd have been quite as robust in the context of Keir Starmer being robust.
I think he couldn't. I think he couldn't go any further than that. I mean, what was he going to say? Actually, throwing murderers and rapists and violent criminals out of prison to make room for people who've posted offensive memes is completely in keeping with the principles of free speech enshrined in our common law. He couldn't say that, could he? So he had to just sort of say, oh, I'm very proud of free speech, while he's, you know, plotting to entirely overthrow it. I think that's the other thing about Starmer, is that we can't pin him down politically. We can't pin him down left or right, or... You know, I've always found it difficult to square this story of him being an old Trotskyist with the kind of Hampstead lawyer, with his kind of very pro-EU, anti-democracy, you know, let's get the country to vote again because they got it wrong. That seems more right-wing to me. The idea of him buying in wholesale to gender identity ideology, that's very much a bourgeois idea. So is he really that leftist? I'm not sure. He certainly doesn't seem to hold fast to any particular point of view for a particularly long length of time. So I don't know what he is, but what we can definitely say he is an authoritarian. Like, baked into his DNA, he is an authoritarian. He's someone who believes that you should be able to control the citizenry with in terms of their speech and thought, and he will do everything he can to ensure that outcome. So at least we know that about him. I mean, he's made that absolutely perfectly clear, and, you know, good on him for that.
I'm increasingly don't think he has a sort of political anchor. What I think guides him is a sense of moral purpose. So it's not saying
lawyer.
That
he's a lawyer, not a politician.
Well, human rights are, but I don't necessarily mean that he's right or that he's even following the right morals. But just if he perceives that, he'll effectively go where the fish are biting. I mean, I always remember with Partygate, the most fluent I've ever seen Starmer was when he was telling someone off. It just never gets better for him. The way he's got, I'm ever so disappointed. I'm sitting over there. There should be lawmakers, can't be lawbreakers. Until, of course, he employed somebody that was a lawbreaker.
He is absolutely an ineffectual deputy headmaster, the kind who it wouldn't quite land, so we'd have to send you to the head eventually, but he's going to come out with those platitudes. That's exactly him. He's so lacking in charisma, and I don't mean to be mean on a personal level. You know, I'm sure as a human being, he's perfectly nice, but he just doesn't have that kind of presidential quality that we've had from prime ministers, that we've got used to from prime ministers, that Boris Johnson had, that Margaret Thatcher had, that Tony Blair had. He just doesn't have it. And that's not his fault. That's just the way he is. But it does trouble. And I also think you're right that it is well intentioned insofar as authoritarianism is often well intentioned. I'm not saying that he believes he should censor people out of malevolence. I think he genuinely believes that that's the way to a better society. I do think that.
Well, I mean, we mentioned a literary reference earlier. I think he'd most likely be Malvolio.
Yeah.
In the Twelfth Night, cross-gartered and grinning.
That would work. He's definitely a Puritan.
Was this a Toby Belch quote? Does thou think before, because thou art a Puritan, that there shall be no more cakes and ale? He's definitely that guy. Do you remember one of his missions was that he spoke about the smell of skunk on the streets? Now, I know that the smell of skunk isn't great. It was just such a weird thing for him to dial into. It may be his only legacy, in fairness.
Did he actually use the word skunk? I'm surprised that he...
The smell of hydroponic... skunk, talking that bubblegum shit that Snoopy's smoking. Do you know what I think he should do? Is like you say, he's too nice. He hasn't got the clout. I've been thinking that he should take, instead of Lammy, he should take Angela Rayner on overseas trips. But by all accounts, apparently she likes them, you know, especially if there's a free safari going. But because she's his bad cop, isn't she? He can't do the tough guy thing. But Angela Rayner, any man in the world would look at Angela Rayner and go, fucking hell, she could kick off. Don't let me release the Angela. Don't let me release the...
She's terrifying. Yeah, she's like a Gorgon. She's terrifying, yeah.
Adolescence. First up, has this discussion about adolescence and teen boys landed at all in the States?
Not so much, although I've been following it online because I'm addicted to social media. So I've very much seen... the reactions from all sides on this. And I haven't seen the show. I need to absolutely... So I've absolutely no idea. It might be brilliant. It might be terrible.
Well, I'm slightly out of step with some of the right on adolescence. I just watched it as a drama. I thought it was quite powerful. The central performance... powerful doesn't mean like I agreed with all the identity issues. I thought it was well executed. The lad that plays the central character was phenomenal, you know. So I just sort of thought, interesting, you know, a drama about things. But then, you know, people have picked up on the identity issues. What's bugged me is the way that the sort of, you know, centre-left and progressives have immediately dialed into this debate about what's going on with teenage boys, right? So there's a window in time where you could say, what is going on? Are they okay? Could be the question you could ask, because the overwhelming majority aren't killers, right? You know, they might be disruptive, they might be truculent, they might be a bit naughty, but they're not that. So there's a moment where we could ask what's going on with them academically or a lack of father figures. And then you sort of see people standing up in the House of Commons going, I think we should show adolescence in primary schools. And like, really?
Well, that makes me definitely not want to see it. You know, that kind of endorsement.
You show Moana in primary schools, you know what I mean? Not fucking a troubling Netflix harrowing drama.
Yeah, you show Jesus of Nazareth and things like that. You know, I mean, the thing is, I don't warm to drama where there's quite a clear moralistic message, you know. I find that really banal. And so the fact that parliamentarians are interpreting it in that way makes me think it's probably not very good. And, I'm not impressed by it. That people keep saying it's all done in one shot. But, you know, the Spice Girls wannabe video was done in one shot. You know, that's a gimmick as far as I can see.
I would say that there's one particular moment where they execute it to good effect at the end of episode 2.
Okay.
It has a point to it. I mean, it's funny. We're now getting dragged off. We're talking about whether or not it's filmed on drones. But what it seemed to unleash was there was a group of people that would go on, you know, Channel 4 News and various mainstream media outlets. And all they seemed to want to do was, you know, they mentioned Andrew Tate. And as I've said many times on this, I would imagine young men have moved on from Andrew Tate. And they may work. They definitely are toxic influencers. But we probably don't know who the fuck they are. Is the main thing, right? But what a lot of them tended to say was, that we should tell young men, right? Get this, Andrew, wait for this, that it's okay to have feelings, okay? And we've got to tell them it's okay to cry. And I sort of thought, that's been a fucking mainstream message for a long time. I mean, I feel like we've been having that chat for about 15 years. And during that time, everything's got worse. So all the evidence is that's doing nothing.
I just don't buy into this idea of this crisis of masculinity insofar as I think there's always been issues that boys have that are specific to boys that need to be addressed. But I just don't buy this idea. I mean, like the constant figure you hear is about Andrew Tate. But Andrew Tate, as far as I understand it, is even an outlier on the manosphere, you know, in that whole world. Like most of the male influences are all about, you know, getting fit and eating well and all these positive things. And also, you know, I've noticed that a lot of the chatter has been about, effectively, it's reducing everything to that old idea of toxic masculinity. There's a lot of that sort of stuff going on. And, you know, there's been a lot of pushback from the right saying that this was based on a stabbing in North London, which was a black kid stabbing. So now, I don't know if that's true. That stuff, that kind of criticism, I find pointless as well, because this is a fictional, creative piece of work. They can do it about whatever the hell they like. They can make the characters whatever race they like. Like, it's not like when they made a film about Anne Boleyn and made her black, which is just factually, historically wrong.
Yeah. It's almost like they're doing a similar thing that's happened on the other side, where they're making it about an identity issue within it. It's not government policy. It's not a documentary. It's a piece of drama. And I would say this, is that I think I'm totally open-minded. Oh, here's a point. I forgot to say this last week. Is some people said, well, they wouldn't make a show about black kids in London and knife crimes. Like, well, they did 5 series of Top Boys, which was a predominantly black cast, and it was all about drugs and guns and knives. So I'm not sure that's a fair critique of Netflix in this instance. And I also think the central performance of this young lad in it, you're going to have to show me who could have been better in that main role first. Because if you're not casting people on who can act the best, then you're falling prey to some of the woke thinking about where you've got a cast based on identity rather than skill. I do think it's fair to say that would they have had the balls to make it a black kid? I think that's a perfectly legitimate question. But equally, the kid in it is so good that, I'd like to know what the alternative was.
I think that's right. I mean, you know, whenever you get these kind of shows, you always get this. Well, there is this sense, and it is true, that in terms of the television industry and in terms of what gets commissioned, you're only going to get a very narrow thing of what can be conceivably commissioned. So you can have a story about a white kid who stabbed someone. I think most executives and commissioners would balk about a story about a black kid stabbing, because they would say, well, this is just reinforcing negative stereotypes about black people. Similarly, you wouldn't have it would be very difficult to get commissioned a story about honor killing, say, and the impact has on women within the Islamic community. Although that is a story that should be told, because that's something that affects an awful lot of people. So you can have those debates, but that's not the fault of the people who made this film. This is the story they chose to tell. It got commissioned. So let's just talk about, you know, the story as it is. You know, making it all about identity and saying that they've, you know, I've seen a lot of memes, but with a picture of, you know, that the Southport killer with an image of the guy from Adolescence saying, this is what they've turned this into this. That's simply not what's happened here. That isn't the case. But as I say, it does sound like, in the same way that I never liked Jimmy McGovern stuff, and it was just always like, they feel like fairy stories to me. They've got a moral. They want to tell a story with a moral. And it feels quite childlike. It feels quite childish.
There's certainly a case that towards the end of it gets very on the nose. Like, by the way, if you haven't worked out what we're trying to tell you, it's almost like you might as well at that point have got in a kind of Hercule Poirot summing up. So there was a toxic influencer from the manosphere. It was a slightly aggressive father.
I get that in children's stories. That's the absolute norm. And that's why I feel like, when that is happening more and more in adult entertainment. Like, there's a really good film by, Was it Michael Haneke back in the day, about a boy who stabs a girl, teenage boy just stabs a girl, and there's no real reason for it. And you never really find out why he does it. And the parents just try and cover it up, and it's disturbing and nasty and chilling, but there is no moral. There's no messaging. It's just the story. And you just kind of think, that's dramatically far more interesting. But if you're going to go to just kids' stories, fine. Like, if you read Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, that is so moralistic in a really funny way. You know, the guy lures in to his factory all these kids with terrible habits. And not only does he pick them off one by one, he has a tribe of Oompa Loompas to sing songs gloating about why if you watch too much TV, or if you chew too much gum, or if you're too spoiled, then you deserve to go up the chute and you deserve to be incinerated. That's that kind of funny approach.
I think that's government campaign that we need, actually, just to shame kids into behaving better.
What most people think.
I saw this thread by this guy called Justin Bowen, who's done some work in the areas of kind of troubled young men, right? So he made some points, and I think they're really worth repeating. Is one is that teenage boys are testosterone fueled, right? So from about the age of 11 through to 19, it will be the highest levels of testosterone they have in their body. And I sort of thought, is this another point where the left are missing the importance of biology and sex, right? Where you go, that's the reality of being a boy. That, you know, and testosterone is a hormone that promotes aggression and risk. Now, not saying that we should say, fine, they can be as aggressive and risky as they want, but you've got to meet them where they are and you've got to channel that, right?
So this is the thesis of Christina Hoff Sommer's book, The War Against Boys. And she talks about and she provides evidence for this idea that we've effectively been treating boys and medicalizing boys because they're not behaving like girls, you know, and they have a propensity for certain type of behavior, rough and tumble play, all sorts of things that are much more prevalent within boyhood, and that we shouldn't be treating boyhood as a problem to be fixed. We need to recognize that they have these traits, exactly what you say, and deal with them appropriately. I mean, that's not to suggest that the kind of hyper testosterone fueled antisocial behavior should just be ignored.
And you can see how social media influencers are a new thing that is potentially dangerous, because teenage boys can have their head turned. But yeah, if they identify someone as a leader who cares about them, there is that danger that they could be a sort of Pied Piper of toxicity. But that's not the only thing going on in their lives. There's fatherless households, there's poor academic outcomes. And the other thing as well is, like, you know, the media will forget about this very shortly, right? And we'll go back to as we were. But during the time that we spoke about it, they said, well, we need better male role models. And the one that they all seem to center on today was Jamie Lang, who used to be on Made in Chelsea. Met him, nice bloke, you know, he's run marathons for charity, but because he cried. So they're just going like, well, look, this is what we need to show young men. This is what we need to show. It's okay to cry. It's like, Jesus Christ, maybe we should just teach him to do performative crying to get everyone off their case.
Yeah, I mean, they, you know, role model, there's something to be said for role models, but why that? Why not like Conan the Barbarian or someone like that? Someone who's strong, but ultimately a decent fella, you know?
Yes.
Am I misremembering that film? I think he's quite a decent chap.
I mean, he does a few beheadings, but they're only of people that deserved it. Okay, now for the patrons, we're going to be talking about the woke riot. For everybody else, it'll be the end of the show. Okay, so this is the end of the show. And listen, man, if you're not a patron, I think Andrew's analysis of the woke left versus the woke right is something that you'll want to hear. I mean, just to sum it, I'm not going to sort of give it away, but it sort of sounds like overcorrection is the biggest problem in humanity, Andrew. It's obviously, it's like, you know that girl that sort of said, well, I dated a drug dealer for 3 years, and you're going, all right, you're finally out of that relationship. Now I'm dating a librarian. You're like, maybe just...
Yeah.
Maybe split the difference, love.
Isn't that the instinct, though? We always go too far the other way, you know? I got a bit annoyed about Starmer, so now I'm in Arizona. It's too much. I've gone too far.
Yes, I was going to say in the middle, yes, but I don't know. That would be somewhere in the Atlantic. Maybe there should be a floating country for disaffected persons.
Something like that, exactly.
Yeah. Well, listen, Andrew, obviously, I can't send people to GB News, but your social media, your Substack is a big thing now. So where can people find that?
Yeah, so my Substack is where I do most of my writing and thinking and trying out ideas. And that's just andrewdoyle.org. So it's nice and easy. And I update that. I always do a couple of articles a week. I do one for paid subscribers and one for subscribers who can't pay. And so there's always plenty of material there, and there's always things that I'm thinking about. So I would definitely say, yeah, if you want to support me now that I'm jobless, I would say the Substack is the way to do it.
Yeah, no, listen, I know a lot of people listen to this, enjoyed your work on Free Speech Nation. So if you want to carry on getting that kind of thing, then do go to Andrew's Substack. And I would say that people that post twice a week on that, there's a lot of people that are sort of cadging a living there, doing a lot less than that. So two a week is a very good return for that. So do sign up for that. Listen, I'm going to do a breaking news episode this week. Remember, new dates on sale. Go to Live Nation. It's my best show ever. Blah. Basic Bloke 2, Bloke Back Mountain, Murder She Bloke, and all the other subtitles I didn't use. We'll be right back.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.